Spy on the World. I'm John Batzer. The New World Report to Ecuador, a troubled land. Remember, the number one country sending people through the Darien Gap to the U.S. for refuge is Venezuela. Number two is Ecuador. This headline from Quito. Ecuador's President Noboa has won significant voter support for a raft of security measures he says will help him fight sharply increased crime. Assassinations, narco-terrorism, smuggling, and indifference to law and order. Ernesto, I come to you on this because you've traveled all these countries and Ecuador is clearly a target now, stuck between two drug producers and at the same time with a young president. How do you measure these successful measures, which include joint police-military patrols, extradition of wanted criminals, longer sentences for terrorism and murder, and tend to battle spiking violence? However, law enforcement needs the cooperation of the public. Does the public agree, or is it just fleeing, Ernesto?
Oh, John, I think the public agrees, and I think this Noboa package is long overdue. I believe this is really needed to save Ecuador from becoming a rogue state, a narco state. So Noboa is doing what has to be done. Legislation changes, tough policies, no holds held. So this is what, by the way, Brazil needed a few years ago, and we did when we had the popular support for Bolsonaro and all. We didn't make the legislation changes, but no, Noboa is clearly taking it seriously, taking the fight against crime seriously. This can be immensely important for the region, not only for Ecuador. If they succeed, it will show a model of, together with Argentina, maybe, of how to fight organized crime all the way, and not just with discourse and not only with speeches. So this can, not only influence in terms of other countries' policies, but also help other countries unravel everything that's in the network of organized crime, corruption, narco-terrorism in Latin America, in every country, mostly.
Joseph, is Noboa fighting crime, or also is he fighting Correa and Morales? Who's the opposition to his measure?
Oh, no, he's fighting. Yeah, he's fighting all that. He's fighting the Foro Sao Paulo. He's fighting Rafael Correa, who's in exile. He's fighting the gangs and the transnational criminal organizations that are taking over large swaths of territory in Ecuador. And he's even fighting elements of his own government, because there's parts of his government that are either co-opted or working against his interests. That said, you know, he's a young president, but he has to essentially start to move quickly to show results, because, you know, he's an interim president, because, you know, he's basically serving the end of the term that the former president Guillermo Lasso couldn't because of his resignation. But he's looking to essentially tackle the security situation head on. So he created this referendum that the Ecuadorians approved overwhelmingly this past Sunday. And among there was nine questions on the referendum. And among those nine questions, the main two areas that really it tackled were to use the Ecuadorian military to augment its police in the fight against transnational criminal organizations. Historically, and like many countries in the world, the military has a more of a traditional defense role in terms of the borders and in terms of the perimeter, the air and the sea, than it does a controlling a security role inside the country. That's in the hands of the police. But there's been a lot of challenges with the Ecuadorian police, mostly because of corruption. And so now what they're looking to do is to have the military take over some of those roles in terms of the internal security. The second big measure, John, that was put forth in the referendum was to basically remove some of the obstacles for extradition. Now, a lot of the criminals in Ecuador, the ones that are serving in prison, are essentially taking over the prisons. As a matter of fact, the head of the prisons just got killed this past week. So, you know, just kind of shows you that the prisoners are really the ones calling the shots inside these prisons. But if they're able to extradite them to third countries, most notably the United States, it could make sure that you could break up some of those prison gangs that are consolidating power. And so all this comes to head in terms of President Noboa's ability to have the measures that he needs and the public confidence that he needs to start achieving results. And that's what this is really about, because I give him about 60 to 90 days, maybe even less, to start achieving significant results in terms of security, or else the Ecuadorian people are going to get very impatient. I mean, beyond just the general insecurity crisis that Ecuador is facing, they're now facing an energy crisis as well. One of the things that you hear a lot about are these blackouts that last anywhere from 3 hours to 13 hours inside the country. In fact, it's gotten so bad that I believe President Noboa is passing a decree to shorten the work week to be able to save on energy. They're already starting to ration energy. So with the blackouts, the insecurity, if the country continues to spiral, the Ecuadorian people are going to get very tired, and they're going to start looking at other alternatives. And the election is next year. It's in May of next year. So he doesn't have a lot of time to do this. But I think the measures, the reform, the referendum, I'm sorry, I think has given him the public boost that he needs to basically start achieving those results.
Ernesto, I love this story. Rio de Janeiro, former Brazilian President Bolsonaro rallied thousands of supporters in Rio in a bid to raise his political capital after losing a bid for re-election. Disenfranchised from running again in the next cycle, and at the same time, rallying in Rio, not his home base, Sao Paulo, but Rio, despite all the allegations, the, what you'd have to say, creativity of the Supreme Court, Bolsonaro is standing with his arm in the air and a bright yellow shirt that I guess is associated with his campaign, recent campaign. He doesn't look in any fashion intimidated. So good for him. But what does this mean to Lula da Silva, that Lula still has to win the election he won?
Oh, yes, very much so. That's one aspect about it. So Lula can't put three people together in the streets like Bolsonaro can put tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. He did that in São Paulo last 2 months ago, and now in Rio. So we're playing a new game in Brazil now after Elon Musk started to point the finger at the Supreme Court and the abuses of the Supreme Court. The House Judicial Committee issued a report on this situation already. So we're in the eyes of the U.S., in the eyes of the world. So what happens if you compare the big demonstration in São Paulo 2 months ago and now? Back then, Bolsonaro was very afraid of being arrested maybe the next day. And the demonstration with hundreds of thousands of people was kind of an insurance policy. So look how people like me and how they would revolt if I were arrested. Now, the political system, the corrupt system that runs Brazil is on the defensive after the Elon Musk allegations and after he showed arbitrariness from the Supreme Court. I think Bolsonaro changed gear to a higher gear in terms of campaigning for his friends for the local elections down this year in October, and maybe already thinking of the elections in 2026, maybe with the hope of being electable again, or being the kingmaker, so to say, of someone appointed by him to run in his place. So, but he's still very cautious. Yesterday in the demonstration, he said, oh, no one should shout anything. So no shouts against anyone, no placards, nothing written against the Supreme Court or anyone. So he is still stepping very carefully in order not to do something that would justify an arrest or something. But I think the tide turned in Brazil against Lula, against the Supreme Court, against what people perceive as a total lack of basic freedoms. But let's see. Elections are not enough to change that, because they are still in the hands of the Electoral Court, which is in the hands of the Supreme Court, and other issues. But I think Brazil is breathing a different air already.
Joseph, you recently were in Argentina, and you had an excellent interview with the security minister, Ms. Patricia Bullrich. And we're looking at a story where Argentina is changing its direction from a state that is beggarly to a state that is prosperous. However, it has a narco-terrorism problem. It also has a threat from the outside, the bad actors from Eurasia. I believe Ms. Bullrich has mentioned other countries that have similar troubles, Bolivia and Chile. Explain what's happening, Joseph.
Okay, so first, let's remind ourselves that, you know, Argentina is the only country in Latin America that has been directly targeted by Iran and Hezbollah in history, meaning that they bombed them twice in Buenos Aires in the 1990s, killing collectively 114 people. So Argentina has a very special antipathy towards Iran and Hezbollah. And just recently, I think is in the last couple of weeks, the Argentine courts, after, you know, many, many years, decades, finally ruled that Iran is responsible for the 1990 bombings in Buenos Aires. That sounds like an obvious statement, but now it's a legal matter. It's legally responsible, and that's something that's stated through the Argentine federal courts. So that's the context in which, you know, right now, President Javier Milei, with everything that's going on in the Middle East, the conflict between Iran and Israel, President Milei and Argentina's close relationship with Israel, that they're concerned about the presence of Iran and Hezbollah in South America, in Latin America. And in that, President Boric, as the security minister, has probably been the most vocal in stating this concern and even pointing to specific countries of concern, most notably Venezuela and Bolivia. Venezuela is kind of well known. There's a lot of documentation. There's a lot of people that understand that Iran and Hezbollah have a close relationship with the Maduro regime, but Bolivia falls under the radar. And so she made this comment. She actually specifically made it on our podcast, in Border Wars podcast. And that became a bit of an echo throughout Argentina and other countries. In fact, it drew the ire of the Bolivian government, who basically denounced her for saying it. But they didn't disprove what she's saying. They just said it's not true. But they didn't talk about their relationship with Iran or Hezbollah for that matter. And then more recently, the minister, security minister Boric, talked about how part of the concerns of the Iran Hezbollah presence in South America, from Venezuela, Bolivia, also spreads into neighboring countries, most notably into Chile. And she said that, I think it was in either a TV or radio interview in her country in Argentina, and that then drew the ire of the Chilean interior minister, and then later the Chilean foreign minister, who made a public statement denying that Hezbollah is active in their country. And then I think the president of Chile, Gabriel Boric, demanded that the minister apologize. My understanding is the minister is traveling to Chile this week and is going to have a meeting with her counterparts to talk about Hezbollah's presence in South America, but also particularly within Chile. And my understanding is going to share information that Argentina has about that. Now, let me make my comments about that, having studied this issue for a long time. The original tribe border, Paraguay, Brazil, Argentina, which the minister has domain and responsibility over because it bleeds into her country, Argentina, that tribe border a long time ago, decades ago, transitioned a lot of its Hezbollah activity into another tribe border, which we call the Andean tribe border, the southern part of Peru, western Bolivia, and northern Chile. In fact, that's even transitioned to another tribe border, which is a maritime tribe border between Colombia, Venezuela, and Panama. And so these tribe borders, which have some of the same conditions in terms of their free trade zones, a decent sized population of Lebanese diaspora, have essentially been hotbeds for Hezbollah activity, mostly in terms of money laundering and financial activity. But because of the intensity and the way things are escalating in the Middle East, we have detected over recent months the movement of Hezbollah operatives in each one of those tribe borders. And I think the minister, she's referring to that specifically. And I'm sure she's going to bring that up with the Chilean authorities when she goes to visit. And Chile, instead of complaining about this and talking about how this is not true, they should actually investigate this, look into it, because there has been movement in recent months of Iranians and Lebanese nationals that we can't know for certain if they're Hezbollah, but it's very unusual movement. Some of it's tied to Bolivia, some of it's not. And that would allow them to have a better certainty about what's potentially happening, because it doesn't take rocket science to figure out that because of the conflict in the Middle East and potential escalation between Iran and Israel, which includes Hezbollah and Israel, that they could decide to take actions elsewhere. And Latin America has already been a target of that in the past, which means that it could be a target of that in the future.
Joseph Vollmer, Executive Director of Secure Free Society. Ernesto Araújo, former Foreign Minister of the Republic of Brazil. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.